Well, I travelled to Gaza and the West Bank with John McColgan earlier this year. A lot of people know John from his work with Riverdance. John founded Riverdance, it was over 20 years ago now. But John approached us earlier in the year, and he was keen to collaborate with Trocar to raise awareness of human rights abuses. That was his particular interest. So we had we spoke about the various human rights programs we do. I mean, obviously we're in about 20 countries around the world, and a lot of them would be very, you know, human rights based programs. But I suppose the one that took his interest was our work in Palestine and Israel. And I suppose everyone has some degree of familiarity with Israel and Palestine and the conflict that's been going on for a long, long time out there. So he was interested in our work and interested in that region. So we travelled out in April, and we spent about 9 days in Israel, the West Bank and Gaza, meeting with various partners of Trocar, Israeli and Palestinian partners, and just giving John a sense of life out there, the impact that the conflict is having, particularly on people who are living under occupation in the West Bank, and people in Gaza who live under economic blockade. So the exhibition that John has put together, This Is Palestine, it's entitled, it's a really powerful look at, I suppose, people's just daily lives. And I think what's really powerful about the exhibition is that it's mostly just portraits of people. So it's just pictures of people, and I suppose the pictures, the way he's captured people, sort of tells its own story in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And did John take the photographs himself? Was that his inspiration? That was his idea, that he wanted to capture a human rights issue?
Yeah, so John did an exhibition last year with the Lifeboats Association, where he did a fundraiser in Howth, where he took photographs of Howth and sold them and raised about €36,000 for the Lifeboats Association. So that was a fantastic result for him. He's a very talented photographer, and I suppose he's over the last number of years began to move more in that direction. So he's done a lot of different photography projects, and yeah, that's his real passion now. So John was the photographer on the trip, and he's got a great way of dealing with people, I think. And he was very keen from the start that he didn't want to give people direction at all. He didn't want to, you know, it wasn't about getting people in poses or in, you know, he just wanted to capture them naturally as they are. And the exhibition's a really, you know, just powerful insight into that.
And I mean, it's interesting because often when we see pictures from Gaza, we see mayhem, we see people being blown up, we see people running away, whereas this exhibition is really, it's just about people living, or like living as best they can under the conditions that they're in.
Well, that's it, and that's the really interesting thing when you go into Gaza, because in your head you're thinking rubble, war, conflict, and you know, when you cross over the border you're nearly taking a bit of an intake and breath, and then you realise that it's just people going about their ordinary day. It's kids going to school, people drinking coffees with their friends, living very normal lives. But what you realise is that that's very superficial. On a very superficial level, they're leading normal lives. But as soon as you talk to anyone, or really, you know, visit where they live, or you know, get any sort of depth as to what their lives are, you realise the incredible frustrations that they have. It's a tiny, tiny area. Gaza is about less than half the size of Leitrim. It's that small, with about 2 million people in it. But most people can't get out. They can't get visas to get out. So they're effectively trapped in this tiny, tiny piece of land. And it's got the highest unemployment rate in the world. 80% of people are reliant on international aid. Very, very poor place. You know, poverty levels far below anything else in that region. And it's very, very man-made poverty, because it's all to do with this economic blockade. Goods can't get in, can't get out. If you're sitting in Gaza, you realise that, you know, you notice that there's nothing in the skies above you, and you realise that's because there's a blockade on their airspace. Nothing's allowed flyover. You look out at the sea and you can't see any ships. That's because you realise there's a blockade on the ocean, so no ships can get out there. And then of course you're surrounded on three sides by this giant 20-foot wall, which stops any people from getting out. So it's a very surreal place to visit, but yeah, people try and just go about their days as best they can. but it's having a really bad detrimental effect on their mental health. Mm. And Sister Bridget Tighe, who is from Sligo, who's one of Troper's partners out there, she's lived there for about 2 years now. A really remarkable woman doing amazing work with young people. And I remember she said to me that people in Gaza aren't even angry anymore, they're just depressed. Like there's just a sense of complete hopelessness about their situation. And that really comes across, I think, in John's photographs, but certainly when you talk to people, that's the message you get. It's just a complete sense of hopelessness.
I mean, it sounds like a prison.
It is, effectively. I mean, it's known as the world's largest open-air prison, and that's essentially what it is, because some people can get in and out. Israel gives visas to business people and things like that, and the Christian community are entitled to visas to visit Bethlehem at Christmas and Easter and times like that. So some people get in and out. It's not a totally locked down, but you know, for 98% of the people there, there's just simply no way they can get out. They're denied permits. And so, yeah, they're effectively trapped, and they're trapped in a place that is, you know, literally falling apart at the seams. The UN says that by 2020, Gaza will essentially be uninhabitable. Now, that's only 4 years away. Like, I know 2020 sounds a long way away. It's not at this stage. And that's really worrying, because the situation is completely unsustainable. And by trapping the population into Gaza, by collectively punishing them for rocket attacks, which obviously shouldn't happen, and we totally condemn those rocket attacks, but by trapping people in there, it's just building up that sense of frustration. You can't expect people to live in the circumstances they're being forced to live in. So it needs a solution, and even within Israeli society, within the Israeli military, the military are, I think, actually ahead of the politicians on this. Actually, when we were there, it was quite interesting. One of the senior generals came out and said, listen, we need to rethink what we're doing here, because this can't go on and it's undermining our own security. Mm. Now, you can imagine the political reaction to that. It was swift and it was very negative. But there are those voices, I think, beginning to come about. And certainly what Troker's tried to do, one of our approaches in the region, is to try to give space to those Israeli voices, saying that, you know, this isn't about winning or losing. It's about trying to come up with a situation that we can all live in. Because we'd have real fears about the long-term security in that region. It's just going to maintain a series of cyclical wars forever under the current situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to ask that. Do all of these measures, the wall, this essential open-air prison, I mean, does it even give the Israelis any greater sense of security? Or are they like the head of security saying, well, it's just really creating, it's a disaster waiting to happen, really. It's a conflict waiting to happen. If you hold all these people in here, eventually they're just going to overflow in some sort of, like a dam bursting almost.
Yeah, I mean, it does. And it's important to say that Israel does have very legitimate security fears. I mean, there's no two ways about that. The second Intifada in 2002 was, you know, an unbelievably vicious and bloody event. And, you know, suicide bombs and buses and cafes. I mean, really awful things were done. They've, since the second Intifada, they've built the separation wall, dividing Israel from the West Bank. And they say that since that was built, there's been no suicide attacks, therefore it's winning. And it certainly, I think, has probably improved that sense of security. But it's also led to a very, just a situation that can't go on. People are, the young men in particular, are so frustrated, so angry. And, you know, if you look at anywhere in the world, like, there is nothing as dangerous as a young man with no hope, because they will make very bad decisions, and we see that now with young people essentially engaging in suicide attacks on Israeli soldiers, where they write messages on Facebook and then make an attempt to stab someone. They know they're going to be killed, but they do it anyway, and that's because there's just that sense of hopelessness. There's a sense that every single year the situation is getting worse and worse and worse for the Palestinians. They've got less land. House demolitions are continuing at a rapid rate. I think last year was the record year for house demolitions in the West Bank. The settlements are still being constructed. So Palestinian land is being taken every single day. They're being forced to live in like enclaves, basically cantons, I suppose you'd call them, completely separated from each other, and completely surrounded on all sides by a military occupation. And you know, you can't expect people to live in that situation and be happy with it. It's completely nonsensical. And you know, that's what we'd say as Troker, is that this isn't about attacking Israel at all. This is about saying to Israel, if you really care about your security, you will try to come up with a just peace and a settlement that actually works for everyone. And the Israeli organizations we work with would say the same. They would say, we are proud Israelis. We love our country. We defend our country. And because of that, we want to come up with a deal with the Palestinians, because this is completely unsustainable.